the flagship station of the Baltimore Orioles. 105.7 The Fan, WJZFM HD1, Catonsville, Baltimore. Let's go O's! CBS Radio Sports and the Baltimore Orioles welcome you to this special presentation of the Hot Stove Show.
Play ball!
This is the Hot Stove Show on Sports Radio 105.7 The Fan. An hour-long look at baseball offseason transactions, player trades, deals, and the upcoming Orioles baseball season. Now, live from Dempsey's Pub at Oriole Park, here's the Hot Stove Show with Jim Hunter on the flagship station of the Orioles, 105.7 The Fan.
And welcome in, everybody, and thank you for joining us here at Dempsey's Brew Pub. We have a nice crowd on hand as we get back at it. Our final show before Christmas, which I know Rock is happy about, and I also know Rocky's happy that he's no longer at the winter meetings.
You know, I'm not one to watch.
Tweets
Jim.
Every 20 minutes. I can't wait to get out of here. I can't. This is brutal. And you didn't even break one story.
It's the most wonderful time of the year, Jim. Haven't you heard?
Okay. Well, I know Dan Duquette was busy at the winter meetings, and Dan, nice enough to drive back and join us here at Dempsey's. From your perspective, and I know every team goes there hoping to make a move to improve your club, and I was kind of giggling today. I saw about seven winners and losers national writers stories about the winter meetings, and I thought opening day was like April 4th. So, well, I know you would have liked to have made a move, the right fielder you're looking for in the catcher, but what's your sense of what you were able to accomplish even behind the scenes?
Well, I see these winners and losers of the winter meetings, you know, and then I see the prediction for the Orioles, and, you know, people don't really like us in the offseason. They don't predict us to do well. But we always have a pretty good ball club, and we try to put together our team not just in December, but in January, February, March, and we want to be good. We want to be good at the end of the season. So we try to steadily build our ball club every step of the way. And we have a pretty good ball club already returning.
Right.
Okay, you got the whole infield back. It's very good infield. They're all good everyday ball players, and you got a couple of all-stars there and some real superstars in Machado and Davis. We need a catcher. We're looking for outfielders. We've tried to address the outfielder issue today when we picked up a couple of outfielders in the Rule 5 draft, and I'm confident that we have a good catcher in the system in Chance Sisko, and we're going to get an opportunity to see him in the spring, and he's going to be able to continue to develop. And we got Caleb Joseph and Francisco Pena there and some other catchers in the minors. So we have pretty good depth at catcher, but we'd like a little bit more experience. And I think we'll be able to add that. And I like our pitching staff. We've got six starters. They're all returning. It's a more established pitching staff than we've had in the past. We got a terrific bullpen. A lot of clubs are trying to build a bullpen, like the Orioles bullpen this past season. It is returning, by the way, with Zach Britton anchoring it, along with two really good pitchers in Michael Givens and Brad Brock. And we also have a good, solid veteran in O'Day and a nice lefty in Donnie Hart. So our bullpen's good. Our starters are good. Our infield is good. We got a good center fielder in Jones. We got a solid 300 hitter in Kim, but, you know, we need to add to our outfielders.
Okay, I just made a mistake. We do have a show next week, Roxy.
I already booked something else, Jim. It's too late.
I lost track of the calendar, but I forgot about that. The 22nd is the following week. That's when we take our Christmas break.
Sorry, Em.
He's got to show up. Sorry about that. All right. I agree with you that this is a good club. 89 wins this past year. Now, how do you balance, you got all the agents, they promise their players X, and maybe they get it, maybe they don't. Other GMs who are in the sell mode are trying to maximize the return. We saw a couple of those trades, a 4-for-1 and a 3-for-1. How do you balance trying to improve what you know is already a good club while also not sacrificing years to come?
Well, I try to look at what we add to the team. That, to me, is the most important thing, okay? Because if you're trading players, you're subtracting from your depth. So I try to add to the team, and the first thing that I look at is to try to sign players and add without giving up something. I think that's probably the most efficient way to look at it because, ball players, good ball players are hard to find. And I like to be in the add mode at this time of the year. So we're going to be adding some pitching depth. We're going to be adding an outfielder or a couple outfielders. We're going to be adding a catcher. Which is what our off-season shopping list is, and we're steadily doing that.
Now, you mentioned Brad Brock when you talked about the relievers who are coming back. Does that mean Brad Brock's definitely going to be an Oriole in 2017?
I like Brad Brock on our team. He has gotten a lot of interest, which he should. I mean, the kid had a great year. He made the All-Star team. He's got three good pitches. He pitched effectively in the playoffs against the Blue Jays. So he's had two really good years, actually, for the ball club. But there's a lot of interest. You know, you see the value clubs are putting on their bullpens, you know, how Cleveland used their bullpen effectively in the playoffs, how the Cubs went all the way with an outstanding closer in Chapman. And then you see the money Melanson's getting, the market for Jansen along with Chapman. You know, so these big-time closers like Zach Britton, who we have already on our ball club, these guys are in demand, and they're getting paid good money.
But do you think part of the reason there is the interest in Brad Brock is there are teams that project him as a possible closer down the road and inexpensive compared to the others? And if that's the case, do you kind of have to look at him as like he may be closing for us one day?
Well, absolutely. I think he's a closer. He was a big-time closer in the minors, had some excellent stats when he was in that role. He strikes out a lot more than he walks, and he's got that split finger. That split finger is a good pitch against lefties and righties. And, he's done it. Whenever he's been given the responsibility here, he's responded. So there's no question in my mind that Brad Brock can close. Fortunately, we have a couple other good pitchers on the staff that I think can I think Givens can develop into a closer. Mm-hmm. Givens, an outstanding fielder. If he gets a little bit more consistent with his off-speed stuff against lefties, he's going to be able to close, too. And he's young. He's a Tiger. You saw how he pitched against the Blue Jays, 7-up, 7-down in that playoff. He went right through that lineup at a time that really counted. And I just got a lot of faith in Michael Givens that he's going to develop into a closer, too.
Now, except for the two big closers that have signed, and Jansen's still out there, the star position players, that market is very slow on the free agent market. Is that in part because most of those stars all have the draft pick, the qualifying offer attached to them, and that might be slowing down a team's willingness to give up that pick?
Well, there's some real teeth in that qualifying offer because it didn't really change with the new basic agreement. It's going to change next year. But clubs that offered a player a qualifying offer, like Mark Trumbo, for example, are due a first-round draft pick. And Ian Desmond signed with the Rockies there. So the Rockies are going to have to give up their 11th pick in the draft, the highest pick that you could give up in this system in the draft, the Rockies elected to give up for Ian Desmond. So clubs will give that pick up for the skill players like Desmond, who plays the middle of the diamond, who can hit. But I'm not so sure they're really interested in giving up that top pick for some of these sluggers that are on the market. And, you know, time will tell how that comes out. But I think clubs are looking at it very carefully. Do we want to give up our number one pick? This is the last time we can get it back for the qualifying offer, because under the system next year, it's going to be diluted. You're going to get a pick later in the draft than the first-round pick. So clubs are factoring that into these discussions, and it's had an impact on a lot of the negotiations for the slugger market. You see Encarnacion, he's talking about being here. He's talking about being there. He's talking about being somewhere else. And I think it's the weight of the qualifying offer on these sluggers that has slowed up the market here.
All right, and one of those sluggers is your slugger, Mark Trumbo, who has the qualifying offer. And a lot of fans, obviously, because of the brilliant year he had in his first year here in Baltimore, would like to see him back. Where are you in negotiations with Mark, and is that a reunion you would like to see take place?
Well, I like Mark Trumbo. He had a great year. He had the best year of his career. He put up 48 home runs, more than anybody else in the league. We made couple of offers to try to sign him that hasn't resulted in a deal. I can't tell you where that's going to go. I can tell you that if he signs with somebody else, we get a first round pick. And if he does sign with somebody else, we have Trey Mancini, who's ready to step in and contribute with the bat. So, you know, those are two things that I know for sure. Whether we're going to get a deal with Trumbo, you know, I don't know the answer to that.
Can you tell us the last time you met with his representative?
Can I tell you the last time? This afternoon.
Really?
You weren't expecting that. See, you shouldn't have left the hotel. See, you
hung around longer than I did.
Anyway, I mean, that's an ongoing discussion.
So how
you know,
was the discussion?
We left the door open for Mark Trumbo, but, you know, I mean, he had the best year of his career, which we really appreciate.
Is there any scenario you could envision, because of the way this market's playing out, that an Encarnacion could fall into your lap in a Nelson Cruz type deal? I mean, you kind of keep an eye on that to see whether he just decides, all right, I'm going to have to try this again next year.
Well, Rock, I really like your thinking, but I don't know. I don't know how realistic that is in the market. I mean, these guys. I mean, Encarnacion's the RBI king of the American League. So anyway, he's got a lot of friends there up north.
Well, and the one thing about Encarnacion on this team, since you have a first baseman of some stature who not only hits but is a very good defensive player. It looks as if to me, even though Encarnacion can give Chris a day off, if he came to the Orioles, there's your DH, but you still would need the right fielder.
Well, I think that's right, and I don't see a willingness by the club to put Chris Davis in right field. That's not really part of the equation. And that's why we drafted a couple of players today in the Rule 5 draft to address that issue in the outfield. This kid Tavares we picked up has got some outstanding speed. He hit 335 in the Eastern League. He was the MVP of that Portland team, which had some very, very good players. And Moncada, the kid that got traded for sale. And then also Andrew Benintendi, who came up and did a good job for the Red Sox. This kid outperformed them at the plate in Portland. So with his speed and his capability to hit, particularly from the left side, I think he's going to be additive to our club. And he's a candidate to play in our outfield. And then the other kid we picked up was the best player in the Carolina League, this kid Santander, who's a switch hitter with power from both sides of the plate, 42 doubles. Okay, 42 doubles. You can look in the book a long time, and the kid's 22 years old in the Carolina League, they're hitting 42 doubles. Those guys usually go to the big leagues and do pretty well. So we picked up two outfielders today, one that can play left in Santander and one in Tavares that may be able to play all three. But they both can hit. Tavares got outstanding speed, and Santander has power not only from the left side but from the right side, which is a rare combination.
All right. Since you brought him up, and Yuri Tavares, you got him in the Rule 5 draft today. He'll turn 25 in April. And you have reminded us so often that if you're in Double-A and you're showing that you could play, you're a phone call away from the big leagues. And one example on this club here, although I'm not comparing him, Manny Machado came up from Double-A. Jonathan Scope came up from Double-A, so obviously there's a track record. But the thing that jumped out at me, he has 536 games in the minor leagues, and he has 2,100 plate appearances. And Terry Crowley always used to remind us, you got to give a guy 1,500 plate appearances until he figures out who he is, and then maybe you know what kind of player you got. These numbers, he hit this number during the season that you just mentioned, the numbers. Are you confident, and I guess you must be because you drafted him, that he has figured out who he is and that might translate here?
Well, I think you hit the nail on the head, Jim, because this kid figured out who he is the second half of the season. They put him at the top of the order. He slugged over 1,000, and he hit over 330. And I am a very big fan of the hitters that can do well in the Eastern League because that is a tough league to hit in. Ballparks aren't that great. It's cold early in the year. It doesn't warm up until about June in some of those northern cities. And you're facing good pitching night in and night out. Caleb Joseph spent a couple of years in the Eastern League, and he effectively came up to the big leagues and performed at the bat. But I think this kid figured out who he is because if you see the improvement that he made when they moved him into the top of the order, he increased his contact percentage. This guy's got twice as many hits as strikeouts. He's got a high on base. He's got excellent speed. He can get on base with an infield hit. He can go first to third. He can bunt to get on base. So this kid has some tools, and I think he has figured out who he is and how he can make a living.
Remember when people thought Caleb couldn't catch when he was in Double-A?
Oh,
they were
yeah.
going to change positions.
He was playing first base. He was DH.
Outfield.
Keep
yeah.
his bat in there.
Yeah.
We had people in the organization.
He had permanent residence at Bowie. He was there 4 years.
Yeah, but his last year, he was the MVP. And he made the Eastern League All-Star team at the end of the season. And this kid did the same thing. He was the MVP of the Portland team, Tavares was. And then he was an Eastern League midseason All-Star, and he made the end of the season All-Star. So this kid has something to talk about between his speed, his ability to make contact, and hit. I think he's additive to our team. We've been looking for some speed, to add to our ball club to hem up the fly balls and turn them into outs in the outfield. That's one of the areas that we're trying to address, and this kid has the speed to do that.
Going back to the winter meetings, because I had such a good time, I'm waxing nostalgic already, and maybe we were just misreading the situation when we would talk to you, but was there a period where it looked like you were thinking we're going to have to go the trade route instead of the free agent route, and then all of a sudden it shifted the other way after you had a couple meetings with teams where you thought, you know what, we may have to go this way instead of that way?
Well, that's a fluid situation, and you know, the market's dynamic. The market's always moving, and there's so many players in the market with the 30 teams. I'll tell you what's tough is these major market teams, they got so many resources to invest, and they invest them on that international market. And I mean, the Red Sox basically trumped the rest of the market by going out and signing Moncada. They paid him $30 million. They paid a penalty of another 20-some million in taxes, okay? Over $50 million to sign the kid. And then they parlayed that into a trade for Sale where they pay the money to Moncada when he goes to Chicago.
Right.
And then they get Sale back as one of the top pitchers in the league. So they just took their major market leverage and they trumped the market on the international market to get the best pitcher in the league. And fortunately, under this new CBA, there's a hard cap on any international signings. These clubs that have outspent the market are no longer going to be able to do that and take the economic leverage that they have from the major markets and trump the market. So they have a hard cap, and they're not going to be able to spend the money and go out and get players like Moncada and then use them to upgrade their major league team like the Red Sox did.
By the way, Rock, I enjoyed your coverage of the winter meetings on Twitter while I was sitting home watching Seton Hall win the Pearl Harbor Invitational. It was perfect. I know what's going on.
I'm having trouble hearing you over the applause of everybody appreciating my coverage. Please, everybody,
They're not under that.
There's the pity applause.
Applause. The thing about prospects is, and I guess this is another one of those balance questions, prospects are, in fact, that because they haven't proven it yet, they haven't made it yet, yet they are valuable, as we saw at the winter meetings, the four go for one player, three go for another player. How much do you have to balance, again, like a Cisco? I mean, this guy's more than on the radar. He's in the very close immediate plans. How do you have to balance how much you give up and then which players? There were three pitchers on Delmarva last year that I'm sure you got calls about that really just all of a sudden put themselves on the radar.
Well, in Cisco's case, there's another player that's on the horizon that could help our ball club, and we happen to have an opening at catcher where he could step in and make an impact on next year's club. Now, if you were in some of the meetings that I was at in the trade discussions, and you could see
– were we invited?
You could see the other club bring up Chance Cisco and see their eyes light up. You would know that there's a lot of interest in him, and they like what he is doing at this stage of it. I mean, here's a left-handed hitter. He gets on base at 400. He's won a couple of batting titles. He's hit over 320 in his career, and he's learning how to catch. He's a good athlete that works at learning how to catch. And when they came up a year ago to catch in AA, here's a kid that took over a pitching staff in August. There was a veteran pitching staff, and he came up from A-ball, and they ended up winning the Eastern League. So this kid has some moxie about calling a game. He's got pretty quick feet. He's learning his job every day as a catcher, and he can hit. He can hit the ball the other way. We saw that in the Futures game where he hit the ball out in San Diego. So, fortunately, we've got a couple of hitters coming up through our minor leagues in Cisco and Mancini who are like 320 lifetime hitters, and they use the whole field, and they can hit the ball, and they should be able to contribute to our ball club next year.
I want to ask you two tough call type questions. Let's start with this one. Is it a tough call for you to hold on to a Zach Britton, as valuable as he is, when I'm sure you're getting asked about him constantly, the market for closers, what teams are willing to pay, what they're willing to give up for him? You've got a guy who actually is going to look like a bargain compared to what others are offering. I'm sure teams are saying, look, what do you need? How tough is it to say, no, we want to keep him?
It's pretty easy. I love to see the guy pitch.
Next. Check.
He's the best pitcher in the league. He perfected the sinker. And, he's with the O's. I like him with the O's. I think he gives our team a lot of confidence. And having a good closer is like having a cleanup hitter. He makes everybody better around him. And Zach Britton has done for our ball club.
There we go.
That is not a pity applause, by the way.
Thank you.
Also, another tough call. Is it going to be tough to wait out Matt Wieters? Because I'm sure you guys have left that door open of bringing him back. And then Scott Boras suggested, hey, when I've had a catcher on free agency, a lot of times he ends up signing in January. And if you let that market play out, you could have guys coming off the board that I know you like, because it seems like that catching market's moving quicker than the other positions.
Yeah, I think we're going to need to move on the catcher's market before January, and I think I'm confident we'll be able to sign somebody to help the ball club.
Is it tough to possibly then have to walk away from a Matt Wieters, whose price could come down if you wait?
Do you think Matt Wieters walked away from us when he became a free agent?
I see what you did there.
Huh?
Well played, Mr. Duquette.
Dan Duquette is with us, Hot Stove Baseball on 105.7 The Fan. We'll take a break. One more segment with Dan. We're at Dempsey's Brew Pub at the ballpark on 105.7 The Fan.
Now, back to the Hot Stove Show on 105.7 The Fan. An hour-long look at baseball and the off-season trades and deals. Once again, live from Dempsey's Pub at Oriole Park, here's Jim Hunter on The Fan.
And don't forget about FanFest coming up. Tickets are on sale now, all presented by Visit Sarasota County. Just go to Orioles.com/FanFest. Baseball season will begin. It is Saturday, January 28th at the Baltimore Convention Center. And you know how it goes. It's always well-attended, day-long celebration of all things Orioles, including Q&A sessions and fan forums where you can actually ask Dan Duquette all the tough questions. So that comes up on January 28th. Get your tickets now, Orioles.com/FanFest. And I also want to mention the Major League Baseball Play Ball Charity will end at 9 p.m. tonight. Now, this year, it's in memory of New York Mets public relations executive Shannon Ford, who passed away of cancer. Of course, 4 years ago, the Orioles lost Monica Barlow to cancer. And each team contributes items to this auction. You go to MLB.com/Shannon to see. Now, one is you can go to spring training, have lunch, and work out with Brady Anderson. Well, not sure in which order. You probably work out, then have lunch. Two people can do that. Spring training PA announcer, how about that? You can sit there at Sarasota at Ed Smith Stadium and be the PA announcer. But here's the one I think you ought to bid on. A behind-the-scenes experience, including watching part of a baseball game in the Dan Duquette suite that Rock Kabatko is banned from. So
I'm sending him in there with a tape recorder.
Rock is not banned from the suite. He pays money every time he comes
in. That's right.
The Play Ball Charity, and this is obviously for a great cause, for two wonderful ladies that we all miss. MLB.com/Shannon, visiting with Dan Duquette on Hot Stove Baseball. So, Dan, in your experience, you've been doing this a long time, and we mentioned, obviously, you would have liked to get something done in Washington with everybody in MLB there. How quickly do some of these deals come together? I saw you were texting during the break. Maybe you got a message from an agent you were responding, and feel free to share if that was, in fact, the case. But how quickly?
I was working on a trade. It wasn't an agent.
Oh, okay. Well, that's even better.
Don't toy with me.
Brock is so eager to break a story here tonight. 4 days stuck at a hotel.
Maybe I want the night off. It could go either way.
Hey, we did draft a couple other guys in that draft today that I wanted to talk about. One is left-handed pitcher Brian Moran from the Braves, who's B.J. Surhoff's nephew. And Brian's a lefty who had a very good record with Seattle. We tried to pick him up a couple years ago. And since then, he had an operation. But he's come back. He's pitching well. Dean Albany saw him down in Puerto Rico, and I think he's going to be able to help us at some point during the year. And then we also got a right-handed pitcher, Jeffrey Hernandez, from the Cincinnati Reds, who's got a 3.06 ERA over the last couple of years in AA and AAA. And this kid throws up to 100 miles an hour. He's got a good arm, and I'm glad we got him into the organization because he's going to give us a little bit more depth.
Now, those two players, they don't have to be on the big league club, right? That was the minor league portion,
yeah.
So they have to be at Norfolk? Is that how it works?
Well, you have to give them a trial in spring training for the AAA club, but Moran should be able to help the AAA club, and so should Hernandez. They're both pretty good pitchers, and they should be additive to the organization. So we add a little bit more depth to our pitching throughout the organization today with those selections. And I got to tell you, Santander was the youngest kid in the Carolina League. Our scouts really like this kid's bat. And Keith Bodie, our manager there in the Carolina League, who saw this kid several times, said he was the best offensive player in that league.
Now, we saw that you had a list of 12 potential players to draft in the Rule 5. Were these four of the 12, or were this their major league and a minor league list?
Well, we spent a significant amount of time on the draft last week after the list came out. And our analytics people went through the production of these kids in the minors, and then our scouting staff culled the list for a couple of for the people that they like. So we put that together. We came up with originally like 40 names,
wow,
which we went through again. Then we got down to 20. We did some more work on the video, sent those out to our scouts. Danny Haas and Matt Haas did a nice job. Joe McElvain and Jim Howard. Those guys, John Stockstill, Mike Snyder, those guys did a lot of work on the video aspect of it. And then we got that 20 down to about 12. And then we culled through those along with about four or five others with our staff over in D.C. So we had quite a few in the funnel at the top, and we ended up addressing our need in the outfield with the two players that we selected today. So we'll see how it looks in the spring. But I thought our guys did a very thorough job in this draft. We were looking for a couple outfielders when we went into it, and we got a couple good ones, I think. I mean, talented ones. Whether they're ready or not to help the club, you know, we'll have to find out in the spring.
All right. Now, Rock mentioned your suite where all the Orioles action took place, and he mentioned the one day it was your nightly meeting, I should say, your media brief with the beat writers, and Chris Tillman's agent walked out. So that was a news flash.
Yeah, let's talk more about that.
I guess he's talking about Chris Tillman's agent. How's that going? Here's the guy who's been your opening day pitcher the last few years, and he's in his walk year.
I noticed that there was a report that the Orioles and Chris Tillman have initiated extension talks right after that meeting.
Yeah.
Did you see that?
I saw that.
I think Rocco tweeted that.
I noticed that was happening. So anyway, the winter meeting is also a good time to catch up with the agents that represent your players. And we did a fair amount of that this week in Washington, D.C. And Danny Horowitz, Chris Tillman's agent, also represents Hunter Harvey. And I really like Danny Horowitz. He worked in Beverly Hills Sports Council. I've known him for like 30 years.
Yeah.
And he's a good agent. He looks out for the players' welfare, and he does a nice job for them. So I really enjoyed meeting with him, and we had a nice meeting with he and his staff, and we did talk about Chris Tillman.
So they initiated talks by inviting him in.
Well, that's what I'm trying to get a feel for. I mean, how much of that time spent was about Chris, and was there like – were there figures exchanged at that point, or is it kind of a, hey, we need to try and sit down and talk about this later?
Well, we made a couple offers to them over the last couple of years to try to extend Chris, and we were not successful. So, you know, we have a little bit of a history with Dan and Chris on these contract extensions. So, you know, I mean, it's just an ongoing dialogue.
So we shouldn't say that anything is necessarily hot at this point, but it's encouraging.
Well, I mean, Chris has been a really good pitcher for us. Dave Engel was telling the story how Chris Tillman was the last player in that deal with Seattle for Bedard.
Yeah, he was in A-ball when the Orioles.
He was in A-ball, and Dave Engel was recounting the story how he did a lot of the legwork for Andy McPhail. And he was saying how, you know, Andy McPhail, when he asks for a player, he wants the other club to resist it, right? And Andy McPhail said to Engel, he said, "I asked for Chris Tillman. They gave him to me right away." Like, hey, if he was really good, they wouldn't give him to me right away. But the Orioles did a good job on that trade. And Dave was funny when he was telling that story. You know, he was the last player in the deal. They asked for Chris Tillman, and I think he had a 5-point ERA in A-ball at the time they asked for him.
He was in the California League.
He's in the California League, and they got him. And lo and behold, he's one of the best pitchers the Orioles have for the last 3 or 4 years.
So you feel like even though he came from outside the organization, that's a check mark for player development because he had to develop in the system.
He had to develop in the system, but I think the scouts did a good job, too, identifying the talent because he hadn't gotten the results there with a 5-point ERA.
Right.
And, you know, that's a good overall job, right? They identified him. They got him. You know, Lee Thomas, that was a trick of his to always ask for an extra arm in the deal. So Andy took a page out of Lee Thomas's book and got Chris Tillman for the Orioles, and, you know, the Orioles have benefited. That's good scouting, you know, good general managing, good player development.
Well, and you mentioned several of your scouts a minute ago, and one you mentioned was Jim Howard. Jim Howard was the scout who found Eric Bedard at a junior college in Connecticut. The Orioles drafted him. He developed, became the Orioles' best pitcher, arguably one of the best in the league. Jim Howard's find was developed here and turned into five players, one of which is Adam Jones, one of which is Chris Tillman. So there it is again. It's all about the scouts identifying and then hopefully the players developing to the potential that you think they have.
Right. So the first link in the winning chain, right, is good scouting. And both Jim and Dave Engel have done a good job for the club.
All right, now, you mentioned the eyes popping when you have some of these face-to-face meetings with other teams about your players. Are you more confident that your system is deeper than maybe is advertised out there based on the other team's executives and names they brought up that maybe you didn't think would come up?
Well, I know it's deeper based on the trade discussions that we had and the way that clubs value some of the young players that have come up on our roster. And if you take a look at the number of players that came up from our farm system that contributed to this team last year is like 17 players on the team came up or played in the farm system before they got here. So that to me is a sign, one, that the farm system's healthy, and then two, we have a competitive team on the field every year, so the organization is healthy. So I don't put a lot of these national publications that rank these farm systems and make the preseason predictions, they're not very good. Okay, their record is not very good. And frankly, I'm sick of hearing about it, okay, because every year we have a pretty good ball club here, and we put together our team throughout the course of the season, and we use players that came up from our farm system, like Zach Britton, like Manny Machado, like John Scope, that are everyday players, like Dylan Bundy, like Kevin Gausman, and they come up, and like Michael Gibbons and Donnie Hart. I mean, they come up and they play here. So I don't really understand what this is about, okay? Because we have a good farm system. It's healthy. It's producing teams for the Major League Club. And we traded about 7 or 8 or 9 pitchers for players to help us in the pennant race when we've been making the playoffs 3 of the last 5 years. So, frankly, I don't get it, and I'm sick of hearing it, okay? Yeah. Because there's no basis for it,
right,
in the performance on the team and the players on the field. You want to look at our farm system? Go out and watch our Major League team play, because we got 17 guys from the farm system playing in the big leagues, and they're winning more games than they're losing.
There you go.
Hey, I've been on the receiving end of this before. It's not comfortable.
Well, I mean, our guys are in the big leagues. They're playing and we're winning games.
Well, hey, one of the online betting sites during the winter meetings dropped the odds of the Orioles winning the World Series from, I think it was 22-1 to 28-1. So apparently the roster's already settled to 7 or 8, so I'll see you on opening day.
Well, we got some work to do. You know, I mean, these clubs north of us, Toronto, the Yankees, Boston, I mean, these are all major market clubs. Make no mistake about it. So if we're going to compete, we're going to have to do a good job, and we're going to have to get in there and slug it out, and we're going to have to find players where other people can't find them, and then we're going to have to make some adjustments in the game to help us win those close games, and we're going to have a little luck. I mean, these guys are putting a lot of resources into it. Look what the Yankees did. They traded Chapman. They got back an outstanding shortstop. They threw up the white towel late in the season, and then now they're going to get Chapman back, and they've got that prospect in their organization. So look what the Red Sox did. They went out and trumped the market on the international market, and they used Moncada to go get Sale. So we got our work cut out for us, but we're going to get in there, and we're going to compete come opening day.
Can you tell us who your next assistant hitting coach is going to be? I have my fingers on the home row here on the keyboard.
I don't quite know the answer to that, but Scott Coolball's coming back, and I thought Scott did a good job with our guys. We scored over 700 runs, and we had a very entertaining team.
When you talk about teams that were checking in on your pitching, are you also hearing from clubs that are looking at your top two picks, Cody Sedlock and Keegan Aiken? Because obviously, especially Aiken, his debut was an eye-opener.
Yeah, I mean, we got two good kids in the draft last year in Cody Sedlock, the number one pick, Big Ten Pitcher of the Year. And the other clubs like him, obviously. We knew that going into the draft. But this kid, this lefty we got, Keegan Aiken, you know, they both played on the same club down in the Cape, the Bourne Braves, and we got a scout that works for Bourne. He did a good job, Harvey Shapiro, and he deserves a lot of credit for those two guys. But the other clubs are asking for them already, and they've only played half a season. These are two good-looking young pitchers. You know, I like to see them get their feet on the ground next year, and then I don't think they're that far away from helping us because of their major college experience. They pitched in the Cape Cod League, and they're getting the hang of things. They throw their secondary pitches over the plate. They got good stuff. Sedlock's a sinker baller, and Aiken has three good pitches, including the changeup.
All right. Finally, we understand the market dictates itself because you have to have somebody else to make a deal with, whether it's an agent or another team with a trade. Do you expect a lot more of these moves, in particular on your shopping list, to be settled by Christmas when you consider that I know a lot of players, probably because their wives want it done by Christmas, sure. So there's uncertainty or non-uncertainty about what's going on. You got about, 2.5 weeks until Christmas Day. Do you expect that now that the meetings are over and all of these discussions went on, that now deals actually could be consummated?
Yeah, I think we're going to be able to do some good and help our team, and hopefully we'll have a catcher. We might have another outfielder and some more pitching depth.
Okay, did your phone just buzz again?
Let me see here.
Hey, as long as we have a crowd here, should we ask how many like Jose Bautista and how many of them don't like Jose Bautista?
No!
You don't want him?
I don't think you have to.
Wait, I didn't get that. You don't want him?
That was an informal poll, huh?
I think it was unanimous, though. Dan, we appreciate you coming up tonight, especially after driving back from National Harbor. And congratulations on a good week, a real nice Rule 5 draft today. I'm really anxious about Tavares, the double-A kid. Those are big numbers, and looks like he's figured it out. So please get something so Rock can break a story by Christmas. And
it'd be a nice present for me if you're thinking of what you want to get me.
We'll do our best.
All right. Thanks so much for coming, guys.
Appreciate it.
That's Dan Duquette, the Orioles Executive Vice President of Baseball Operations. Now, when we come back, we're going to hear all about Rock's adventures at the winter meetings. Stay with us on Hot Stove Baseball. And don't forget to reserve your spot now at Oriole Park, the upcoming 25th anniversary season of Camden Yards. Place your deposit today on a full or partial season plan. Season plan members enjoy dramatic savings over the cost of single game tickets, plus a full line of exclusive orange carpet benefits, including baseball's most flexible exchange policy and access to Orioles opening day. So get on board now for 2017. It'll be here before you know it. Orioles.com/deposits or call 888-848-BIRD. Mark Turgeon show follows us here on 105.7 The Fan. And next week, how about this?
Is there a show?
Yeah, apparently there is. The host got his calendar mixed up. See, when you work once a week, you forget what day it is. I mean, I'm going to be honest.
I hear you.
But next week, Chris Davis will be here in person for Hot Stove Baseball, right in that chair.
How about that? We've had Dan Duquette twice, Buck Showalter, and now Chris Davis. This is the place to be, folks.
A guest in person each show. So mark that down. Call Leroy, make a reservation, because you know it's going to be crowded. Chris Davis next week. All right, let's hit on some of the topics.
They're already lining up now, by the way.
Leroy, where are you, Leroy? Right fielder.
They're not going home.
Well, they'll actually like that if you stay and spend money. That's not a bad thing. Let's go in order. We're assuming the DH, unless it's Trumbo, is not a higher priority than the outfielder. So let's see. Michael Bourne is still very much in play. Angel Pagan is still out there. He's aging, but he's a veteran. Probably get him on a one-year deal. And the thing I like about Pagan is he's been on winners in San Francisco, so he knows how to navigate it. What was your feel coming back from the meetings, and where might they go to fill that need?
You know,
keeping in mind Tavares now, the Rule 5 kid is in that mix.
And, I mean, obviously I'm just being realistic. To me, Dexter Fowler is still the absolute perfect fit, but I know he'd rather play center field. But that's the guy if I was going to be going four for – and I'm, you know, 60 to 70, and again, it's not our money, Jim, so I'm just going to spend it to make believe money. That's the guy I go after because I think he automatically makes them a much better team than if you just bring in another home run back because they so desperately need that plus defender and right who's a big on-base percentage guy who has some pop. He can hit you 15, 17, 20 home runs, a threat to steal base, leadoff hitter, switcher. To me, that's the perfect guy, but I'm being realistic that I just don't think they're going to go there. So, yeah, Pagan is on their board. They like Michael Saunders. I reported that at the winter meetings, and Buck confirmed it because there was so much confusion where I wrote that, and I had somebody say, oh, there's no interest there. And then Buck's like, oh, yeah, he's on our board. So I'm glad I just stuck to my guns on that one. But that's not a possibility, though, that maybe some injury concerns, health concerns, could he pass the physical. I heard some murmurings about that, but then Buck said, oh, he'd be fine. So there are some directions they could go. I just know that when they're talking about Mark Trumbo and they'd like to bring him back, that is as the DH because they really do want to improve the outfield defense, including the corners. So, and if there's no Mark Trumbo, then, you know, and I know Dan was downplaying the need for a DH because he said we have Trey Mancini, and yet there are multiple reports by John Heyman that they've reached out to Chris Carter's agent, which makes no sense to me because he would be a DH.
Yeah,
he's not a guy that should be – sure, he plays under other positions. A lot of people, air quotes, play other positions.
Well, he had to last year in the National League. He had to play first
exactly,
base.
Exactly,
yeah.
And not well. Right. So, you know, he would be a DH, and I just don't think that's where they're going to go.
All right, the other position is catcher because somebody has to be on the team with Caleb.
And, is it a rule? I don't know. Caleb can catch 162.
No, I don't think so. I don't think that's a good idea. If Wieters comes back, it's at least a two-year deal, which means if it is Wieters, you don't see Chan Cisco in 2017. Of the veterans that are out there, I was surprised Wilson Ramos went so fast, but then I thought about it, why the Orioles maybe didn't go after him. He's probably not going to be able to catch till June or July.
Right.
The Orioles are hoping Cisco may be ready by June or July. So why sign a veteran when you're going to have to guarantee the second year if he can't catch till then when your prospect may be there? So then it comes down to Wellington Castillo, who we saw here in the interleague this year and looked pretty good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you know, I've asked multiple times, and Dan keeps confirming that he's willing to sign a veteran to a two-year deal, even with Cisco waiting in the wings to pair with Caleb. But, yeah, it would be the idea that that guy would be playing right away. This next season, not
right.
Somebody who's got to get healthy and you slow play him. But they are willing to do that, and they like Wellington Castillo. They like Nick Hundley. I had heard that they liked A.J. Ellis, so I never got to confirm, but that was one of the you know lobby buzz type things that you kind of run with. And then he signed a one-year deal with Miami. But any of these other guys, you're probably going to have to go 2 years. I know people say, you're kidding me, 2 years for Nick Hundley? Well, you got 2 years the last time, and the Orioles didn't want to go that second year, and that's why the Rockies got him. I think they would do that now. They definitely like Castillo, and I had heard that they were going to talk trade with Arizona before he was non-tendered. I know Buck's still scratching his head. Well, why would you non-tender him? Well, they don't want to pay him the money. Well, tender him and trade him because there was interest. You could have done that. But so they are willing to do that. I thought it was kind of interesting where, again, Dan said that he's going to have to make a decision before January. And it's true because guys are coming off the board. And, you know, they're still talking about Wieters. They haven't closed that door, but if Boris is determined to wait it out, as he's been known to do, not in a big hurry, and it goes into January, this team definitely will have moved on by then. Because by the time January rolls around, Hundley and Castillo could be somewhere else. So you just can't wait. You don't have that luxury.
Well, the other player we shouldn't forget about is Francisco Pena, who I thought did a great job this year in his limited time. And he's an underrated catcher. And if you're the backup, that's what your main job has to be. The receiving part of it, if he hits, that's great. But once or twice a week he's in the game, the defense has to be number one. And I think he's very capable of filling that role if they don't want to give that second year, hoping that Chan Cisco makes it sooner than later.
And I've heard some people say the same thing whenever I bring up, and no offense to him, Nick Hundley, but when I say the Orioles really like him, I've had people say to me, and Dave Johnson has said it multiple times, he's like, is that really an upgrade over Pena or even Audrey Perez? I mean, these are guys who are considered, you know, that work well behind the plate. Perez had really good numbers, probably the best offensive season on Triple A, and I don't know whether you can count on that again, but he hit the ball pretty well, and he wasn't taken in the Rule 5 draft. They left him exposed, and I thought somebody might pick him up because I've heard people say he's ready right now to at least be a major league backup. So that's a luxury. So do you really need to go out and get somebody else to a two-year deal when you have these two guys? They're still going to do that. They keep saying they want to add a veteran, but they're catching depth.
All right, I got about 15 seconds. Have you been home yet since coming home from the winter meetings?
I was there very briefly, went to the gym, even though I had this terrible cough, came back, tried to do some work real quick, and then hustled over here.
So even if you're tired, you're ill, those arms still get the workout.
You know, you can't neglect the guns, Jim. And Chris Davis will back that up next week.
Apparently I do. So, all right, Rocco, good to have you back.
Thank you, pal.
Glad you survived the winter meetings.
And, thank you.
Don't forget next week, which, by the way, is the final show.
That's
next Thursday. Chris Davis right here in person at Dempsey's Brew Pub. Stay tuned. Mark Turgeon comes your way.